and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have Dr. June Olds, and she is our Chief Veterinary Programs Officer here at Blank Park Zoo, and also is a Clinical Assistant Professor of Zoo Animal Medicine up at Iowa State. And I can't believe I got that right on the first try.
Good job.
And so it's great to have you on because the name of the show is Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. And so we actually have someone on the show that saves animals. So that's great to have you on.
I do my best.
All right. So Jesse Lowry is also here. And Jesse, why don't you get things started?
Thanks, Ryan, as always. I'm Jesse Lowry, Director of Conservation and Research here at Blank Park Zoo, and I always like to set the stage and talk about the role of a modern zoo in saving animals. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. I see it as a window to the wild, a place where we can bring in the community to get a glimpse of the beauty that the natural world has to offer and a chance to look into the eyes of a snow leopard or see the amazing agility of a sea lion and feel that sense of awe that we all feel when we see these animals that we have here at Blank Park Zoo. But our role is to turn that sense of awe into a real conservation action, something that everybody can do in their own lives that's going to make a difference for the environment and for animal populations in need all over the world. And so that is our role. We've got an audience of 500,000 people a year almost. And so we've got really a great platform and responsibility to be getting these messages of conservation out to the public and really a message of hope. We want to make sure that people know that there's lots of things that you can do to save animals. And something easy to do is to be sustainable in your own life. And the zoo tries to be as sustainable and as green as possible because especially the use of single-use plastics has a direct impact on native Iowa wildlife here in Iowa. So we try to be as green as possible here at the zoo and encourage our public to do as well. If you want to get the most bang for your buck in saving animals, working locally is a great thing to do. And we've got a lot of great examples like our Plant Grow Fly program, encouraging folks to plant butterfly gardens to help butterflies and bees. And we've currently got over 1,000 gardens registered with the project. So go to our website, plantgrowfly.com or blankparkzoo.com to find out more. The real backbone of what a zoo can do is the support of field conservation, those individuals and organizations that are out on the front lines in the range countries of the animals that we have here at the zoo, working to decrease human and wildlife conflict, to protect habitat, to do all of these different things to help them survive in their range countries. And, the most important thing to remember here is that just by visiting Blank Park Zoo, you're part of the solution. A portion of every dollar that we make here at the zoo goes to save animals in the wild. And a lot of that goes locally to projects like Plant Grow Fly. And some of that goes internationally as well to programs like Giraffe Conservation Foundation or International Rhino Foundation. So just by coming to the zoo and having a fun day out, or coming to Zoo Brew, or maybe you get married at the zoo, you're helping to save animals. And so it's been really exciting to see what we can accomplish with the help of the public. And really the foundation of everything that we do here with our conservation at Blank Park Zoo, the foundation of everything is taking the absolute best care that we possibly can of our animals that we have here at the zoo. And veterinary medicine is a core aspect of taking the absolute best care that we can. And that's why we're so excited to have Dr. Olds here with us today. So Dr. Olds, again, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit first about your background and how you ended up here at Blank Park Zoo.
Well, I started with Blank Park Zoo in 2004 as a contract veterinarian. So at that time, the zoo was managed by the city of Des Moines. And so the role of the veterinarian was a contractor. And my job at that time, I worked full time as a small animal veterinarian in the Des Moines area. And I was at the zoo one day a week and then on call all the rest of the time for emergencies. And over the past several years, that time increased gradually until 2011, when it became increasingly evident that the zoo was growing, our quality and standards of of care for the animals was growing. And we created a position that was a shared position with Iowa State University to share me between the College of Veterinary Medicine and the zoo so that the zoo would have more veterinary coverage. And since that time, we've grown the program even farther. So now it's not just me as the only veterinarian. I have Dr. Drew Gall as my associate veterinarian. We have a part-time veterinarian that comes in. So my goal for the zoo is that we will eventually have a 7-day-a-week veterinarian on site. Right now, if there's not a veterinarian on site, either Dr. Gall or myself are on call for emergencies. But right now, we're at 6 days a week, and hopefully this summer we'll be at 7 days a week of veterinary care for our animals. So there's always a veterinarian here for them to take care of them.
So how much of your time is here at Blank Park Zoo, and how much of your time is at Iowa State University? And when you're at ISU, what are you doing?
So right now, my time is split 20% at Iowa State and 80% at the zoo. And so 1 day a week at Iowa State and 4 days a week at the zoo. When I am at the college, I'm teaching students about exotic animals and the problems that they face. And then when I'm here at the zoo, we are involved in the clinical medicine, the clinical care of the animals at the zoo, and also teaching students. We have students from the College of Veterinary Medicine who are in their 4th year at Iowa State who are on rotation with us at the zoo. And those students participate in all the clinical care of the animals when they're here with us. So we also teach students here.
It's just amazing all the animals that you have to take care of. You know, when you think of a doctor and they have a specialty and they may only look at, you know, ear, nose, and throat, and that's it. But a veterinarian at the zoo has all those animals and all those features of those animals and different diseases and everything like that. So you've really had to study and learn lots of different things, and there's lots of different diseases and ailments and things that animals can get.
Right. And that is one of the challenges of my job, but that is also one of the things that I love about my job, because this position forces me to become a lifelong learner. And so obviously I don't know everything there is to know about all animals, and no one does. And so we are constantly learning. I constantly have to research and read and get up to date on what's been learned recently about these species. And we are on the cutting edge of finding out what is going on normally with these animals. And so we are still contributing to a growing body of information about the care and the medicine of these animals, because so much is unknown still. So that's the great thing, but it also is a little unsettling. But you do have to be, I always tell my students that to be a zoo vet, you have to have a little bit of ADHD. You have to be able to bounce from one thing to another and not to get flustered. So you can't be so entirely focused on one thing. You have to just roll with it. So I can look at a frog and then a rhino and then a giraffe and then a duck and then a crane and just go from one thing to the next and just roll with it, rather than getting really freaked out about the details.
One of the things that I don't think is fair to you about being a veterinarian is when the animals see you coming, that you might not always get the best reaction from them.
Right. So animals and people have what we call white coat syndrome. And so certain people get scared when they go to the doctor's office and their blood pressure goes up. And so unfortunately, some of our animals know that I'm the doctor here. And so they'll react negatively toward me. We're really trying with our training programs to get them to accept me and understand that I'm not such a bad person.
Yeah.
So we try to allow me to interact with these animals, not just on a medical side of things. I like to go give them treats and interact and just observe them and not do anything that's mean. But as a doctor, you know, a lot of the things that I do involve needles, and animals, just like people, don't like needles sometimes.
Yeah. So, and a snow leopard has a different reaction than, say, a 5-year-old boy, right?
So, yeah, exactly. Maybe a little more aggressive than the 5-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about the training. We do a lot of positive reinforcement training here at the zoo.
Yes.
To allow the animals to take part in their own health care and ease all of these things that we need to do with veterinary medicine to take the best care of them.
Right.
So what kind of behaviors have the keepers been able to train that's made your job a lot easier?
We have made some amazing advances with our training programs here. So when I started in 2004, our sea lions would not come up on on deck if I was around. In fact, one of the sea lions would swim up and splash me if I came out on deck. And so we have progressed to the point now where the sea lions especially are trained to open their mouths and let me look at their teeth. They allow the keepers to brush their teeth. They are trained to allow me to auscult their heart, so listen to their heart with my stethoscope. They'll roll over and I can feel their abdomen. I can do ultrasounds. We have them trained to lay on x-ray. And so we can do all of these things that used to require anesthesia. And all of these are done with just behavioral training. Our rhinos and our giraffes are trained for blood collection just with voluntary participation. Our giraffes have participated with training for hoof trims and for x-rays. So all of these things have progressed over the years, and we're just making more strides every day. So we're getting away from forcing the animals to participate in their health care. They are voluntary participants in their health care, and it's less stressful for the animal. It's much less stress for me. So it's a great world to be in, and to see where we were and where we're going, and how far we've come.
A lot of people have mammals as pets at home. They have cats and dogs, which a lot of them will do some training, especially the dogs.
Right.
And so you could relate how a rhino or maybe one of our big cats could be trained, but the tortoises and other animals that you think maybe aren't as smart can be trained as well. Can you tell us a little bit about perhaps Barnaby? And I know he's had some eye issues, and what kind of training has happened with those other kinds of animals?
So our tortoises have been trained for blood collection. They've also been trained for eye drops. They'll do an open mouth behavior as well. So with just a hand signal, they'll open their mouths and let us look inside their mouths. So it is not limited by the species. Any animal can be trained. And I know that there are institutions that have trained their crocodiles for things. There's an institution that has trained frogs to jump on a scale for weights. So any species, as long as you understand what the motivation is for that species, and it's all positive reinforcement training. We don't force the animals to do this. So it's very remarkable what they can be trained to do. And I think that we have vastly underestimated many of these species for a long time of what their capabilities are and of learning and training.
And so just to unpack that just a bit more, positive reinforcement training means that we find out, like you said, what the animal's motivation is, what they would like to be rewarded with.
Right.
Most time it's food. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's attention. Sometimes it's petting.
Right.
Sometimes it's their favorite toy.
Right.
And we can use that to make these experiences really positive experiences for them.
Right. And that's what I tell people when they ask me, you know, how do you train a rhino? I'm like, if you rub their bellies, they'll do almost anything, right? They love it. So it's a great thing to learn what these animals enjoy, and it doesn't always have to be food. Sometimes it's just the intention and the interaction.
And you can see daily during the summer the results of our training and a training session with our seals and sea lions twice a day.
Right. So, yeah. Yep.
So we were talking about how hard it is to keep up on all the different types of species that you work with and all the different ailments that they possibly could have. Is there a lot of collaboration between other zoos and other veterinarians at zoos?
There has to be. There are 200 plus AZA accredited institutions. Many of those have a veterinarian or multiple veterinarians, and we are constantly in contact with each other via conferences or listservs or phone calls to share information. We also have the species, the SSPs that we collaborate in, and the ZIMS, the Zoo Information Management System, where we share information. So you have to, because there are so few of these animals, you have to share information or else we won't be able to understand. So that no one hoards information, we're more likely to share and ask each other for support.
Tell us about the day in the life of Dr. Olds at Blink Park Zoo. What is it like to be the veterinarian here, and how do your days go usually?
So that's one of the biggest questions I get, and obviously no day is typical of what we do. We do try to plan annual physical exams for most of the animals in the collection. And so we schedule those just like a doctor's office would. We make a plan for we're going to do the physical on the otter today. But then we also have to be responsive to emergencies. So we have our radios with us. And so if an animal appears ill or injured, we have to respond to that right away. Also, there is a lot of teaching that's involved because we have students on with us. So we try to do rounds concerns on species issues or health concerns in different species. So students today, we talked about lizards. We did lizard rounds. So there's a lot of that. And then an awful lot of time spent on communication. Because my patients can't tell me what's wrong, I rely on the zookeepers that care for them every day to tell me what they see and to let me know what's normal and what's not normal for that animal. And we have an excellent staff here who's passionate about the animals in their care, and they're very good at sharing with me, hey, somebody's off today, I need you to come look, or no, that's what they do every day. And sometimes from the outside looking in, unless you have that deep connection with that animal, you might not know if that's normal for the animal or if that's abnormal. And these people really understand these animals here.
Can you think of any special cases where we had a great success here at the zoo with care of a specific animal that would be neat to share?
We have a lot of success stories. I think one of the cases that I am most pleased with is an ongoing case that we're doing right now. So Zuri, our giraffe, is 22 years old, and she had our little baby Lizzie last year. And she's a special favorite here at the zoo. She's one of our most trained giraffe. And she came up with a little bit of lameness last winter. And just with training, we have been able to get x-rays of Zuri. Zuri's foot, do treatments on Zuri's foot. So we've had specialists come in. We actually put a support boot on her foot to help. She had a toe fracture, and we were able to apply that bandage, replace that bandage, train her for hoof trims, and we're continuing to do treatment for her. It's neat that you can see that an animal that when we started the training program was in her late teens to early 20s. And so you can teach an old giraffe new tricks. This is not something that she's learned as she's, you know, this training program for her started only probably within the past 5 years. And everything that we've done with Zuri, we have done without using drugs, without using any restraint at all. It's all been cooperative training that we have been able to achieve the goals of treating her, and she's getting better. And it's great success to know that and that we can continue to do it, and that Lou and his team are going to continue to work with Zuri to make sure that we can keep her as healthy as we can.
And one of the great things about doing it with training is we don't have to immobilize, which right. has a high probability of, not high probability, but a higher chance of negative outcomes.
Right. Anesthesia in giraffes, and in many of the species we work with, anesthesia is tricky. And in giraffes in general, it can be, you know, the mortality rates can be as high as 30% that a giraffe will die if you anesthetize them. And part of that is their anatomy. You know, they have a very long neck. And when you anesthetize them, they have to lay down. And so getting a 17-foot animal to fall down under anesthesia can be tricky and dangerous. So we want to avoid that if we can. And so all of these things we've done without any anesthesia at all. And that's a great accomplishment. In the old days, when I started in 2004 and we didn't have a training program, we did have to anesthetize our giraffe for similar problems, for foot issues. And although we never lost one, it was very nerve-wracking for us. It was very nerve-wracking for the staff to have to put the animal through that. And then there's, you know, this fingers crossed and holding your breath when they stand back up again too. So not having to go through that is better for all of us. Not that we wouldn't do it. Yeah. We will do it if we absolutely have to, but you have to have the benefits have to outweigh the risks. And so far, we haven't had to do that with Zuri.
One of the things that I think shows Blank Park Zoo's commitment to animals is some of the procedures we have accomplished, say, on our seals and sea lions with their eyes, where if you looked at it from a business model, do the dollars make sense to do this operation on this animal? A business person would have to say no, but Blank Park Zoo cares about its animals and the quality of life they have. And so, yes, we have spent thousands upon thousands of dollars. And I've had the privilege of being able to videotape these procedures and, you know, the amount of specialists we have brought in and everything. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of those big procedures we've done.
Right. We've had to do several coordinated procedures where we brought in some experts to help us. And just like you or I going to our family doctor, there's a limit of the amount of things that your family doctor can do for you before they send you to an orthopedic specialist or a neurologist or an ophthalmologist. And so I consider myself to be the general practitioner for for the zoo, but when we get into a complicated issue, I need to call in a specialist. So we have called in, we've done 3 cataract surgeries so far in my time here at the zoo, where we've flown in a specialist, flown in anesthesiologists who specialize in sea lion anesthesia, and provided the best possible outcomes for those animals. And we've had 3 very successful surgeries. And then Addie, of course, our sea lion, we've also had to take her for endoscopy because she has consumed coins, unfortunately, a couple of times. We've had to fly in an anesthesiologist to help us with that. So there are certain species where the risks are pretty high, and we want to make sure that we cover those risks as best we can. And when you talk about the business model or, you know, that benefit, I would say the Blank Park Zoo kind of provides universal health care for our animals. And so mm-hmm. we don't look at it strictly from a monetary standpoint. Right. We see that they deserve the care, and we want to offer them the highest quality care they can have.
We've had a lot of babies the last couple of years. How does that affect the health care that we offer both the mothers and the new babies?
Yeah, so many of our babies do great and, go forward as nature intended it. So our little baby rhino that we had a little over a year ago, she was a huge success. I didn't have to help her be born. Mom did all the right things. She nursed her. She cared for her. She grew normally. It all went great. And I love those instances where I'm not needed. You know, I just got to watch and enjoy it just like everybody else. But then there's been some cases where the animals have had a little a hard time and we've had to assist either with mom or with the baby. And we've had some successes with that too. And so that's always great. And we're coming up on springtime and we're going to hit our new round of babies. We just had one last week. So we are here to help if we need to with those little ones. And sometimes that means helping their immune system build up a little bit. Sometimes they need a little extra food. Sometimes they aren't cared for by mom, so we have to take care of them. And we've been able to provide that. So we've had quite a few success stories in the baby department.
Can you talk a little bit about the gestation and Eastern Black Rhinos and how we confirmed that she was pregnant?
So the rhinos are complicated because they're such a massive animal. And so we have to go at it with multiple different ways of trying to detect the pregnancy. And so if anyone's familiar with what veterinarians do with cows and reproduction, that requires doing an ultrasound through the rectum. And so we have our rhino trained for a transrectal ultrasound. And Dr. Gall or myself, we have to put on that big sleeve and we have to go in there and look for things. We also use hormone monitoring, and we can do hormone monitoring now with the training with blood, or else we can do fecal hormone monitoring. It can be challenging because of the massive size to find that baby in that big belly, and so that has been our challenge, and we've even flown in an expert to help us with Ayana's last pregnancy to help diagnose that. And we will continue to use multiple modalities. And then once we confirm the pregnancy, we also use the ultrasound and the fecal hormones to monitor that pregnancy. So you're talking about a gestation of 15 plus months. And so it takes an awful lot of monitoring to make sure that the pregnancy is proceeding as we want, and then we can hopefully predict when that little one's going to come.
Since our animals get such good health care, a lot of times they will live longer lives than they would if they were on their own. Mm-hmm. So then they sometimes develop diseases sort of as humans will when they get older.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that and how we care for our more elderly animals.
Right. We have several geriatric animals here that are being managed for diseases of old age. And so old age in and of itself is not a disease, but a lot of times things crop up. So arthritis issues, disabilities, sometimes tooth issues where their teeth have worn and they can't eat as well. And so we have to manage those. We have lots of animals on arthritis medication. We've done acupuncture for some animals to manage their pain. We do multimodal therapies, so we don't just choose one pill, but maybe we'll have an anti-inflammatory and a deep pain reliever, and then a neurologic agent to try to manage pain. So we also employ some quality of life monitoring. So we have scales where we have our staff monitor those animals very closely and make sure that the level of care we're providing them is meeting their needs and keeping them comfortable. And then, unfortunately, at times we have to make decisions when those animals, when their pain is too great, and we have to make choices for them.
And that's never an easy thing for anyone on staff.
It's not. Yeah. And maybe what people don't understand is the level of attachment that the people here have for their animals. So it's very similar to someone who has a dog or a cat at home and have worked with them every day, lived with them. And also because we do their veterinary care on a day-to-day basis, we have strong attachments to them too. And so it's not easy when we reach those choices. But I feel like we have a really good established program here for getting to those conclusions, and we never want to, you know, a day too late is always worse than a day too early. And so sometimes when we reach those conclusions, it's just best for the animal to go down that road.
We've touched on many of these already, but could you sum up for us what are a couple of the main challenges with your position, and then what keeps you going? What are some of the favorite things that keeps you going in this position?
So some of the challenges definitely are those end-of-life choices that we have to make. That's hard on all of us. And I think that sometimes the struggle is just like in human medicine, you know, you have good days and bad days, and sometimes the radio is calling all the time for me and I can't get to all the animals. And that's where it's nice having Dr. Gall here, where we can share those responsibilities. What gets me through the day is I still wake up every morning and I'm excited to come to work, and I get to work with passionate people who love what they do. And I feel like what a privilege to have a job that you get to do that, because not everybody gets to do that. So that's an awesome thing. And when I'm feeling low, I just have to sit down and be grateful for what a great opportunity I have to do this. So, you know, I'm living my childhood dream, and who wouldn't want to do that?
All three of us sitting in this room feel exactly the same way and are extremely passionate about our job. And that's why we work here at Blank Park Zoo. And we're so passionate about animals, and you do a really good job for the animals, June.
Thank you so much
for being here
do
today.
Do you have a favorite animal?
Oh, that's the other question I always get asked. Do I have a favorite animal? I do not have a favorite animal. I love every aspect of everything I do. I am not that thrilled with our cockroaches and tarantulas. I don't dislike them. They're just not my favorite. But, you know, some of the animals it's possible to do more with. So I do love giving rhinos belly rubs. That's a favorite thing. And when I'm having a bad day, if I can go over and give a rhino a belly rub, that usually cheers me up. But no, I don't have a favorite.
All right, then. Well, if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website, blankparkzoo.com. And you can check out our YouTube channel, and we have lots of videos on our YouTube channel. And even some of those procedures we talked about are up there on our YouTube channel. You can see what we've been talking about and how we give our animals the best care we can possibly do. Also, you can find out about our events coming up this summer and all sorts of fun things at blankparkzoo.com. Well, we're out of time, so we'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.